Good morning and welcome to the Northwest Mo Info Show, where we take you around Northwest Missouri and Southwest Iowa to help you stay up to date on local events and opportunities, and also to get involved with local groups who are helping make a difference around our region. I am your host, Rick Turner, and today we're joined by Larry Linthicum. That's a familiar name in the area, as Larry's a South Harrison alumni. He went on to play D1 football at the University of Missouri. He later came back to serve as superintendents of both South Harrison and the Maryville school districts. After serving as the Jefferson City School District superintendent for several years, Larry's once again moved and is now the CEO of Special Olympics Missouri. Larry's going to tell us more about Special Olympics, which has over 1,000 athletes in North Missouri. Later, we'll have the pleasure of speaking with Caroline Bailey with the Missouri Baptist Children's Home. That's part of recognizing November as National Adoption Month. We're pleased to have Larry Linthicum with us this morning. Larry's recently undertaken a new endeavor with Special Olympics Missouri. So welcome, Larry. We're glad to have you this morning.
Thank you, Rick. Good to be on here.
So most people, I imagine, are familiar with the term Special Olympics, but they don't really realize what it entails, and it actually functions year-round. So if you could briefly tell us about Special Olympics Missouri and what it does.
Sure can. The bottom line, we're just trying to increase the confidence of those with intellectual disabilities through sports. That's in a nutshell. There's a lot of different parts to them. Special Olympics is known as far as I think most folks are familiar with it. It does have an approval rating of 95%, I believe, in the U.S. And here's one other little data for you. 73% of Americans believe Special Olympics is the most honest charity in the United States. So there's a lot of different parts to it, but at the end of the day, through sports, and sports has always been a big part of my life, and here, those with intellectual disabilities, giving them the same opportunities for all of us, and to help them increase their confidence and then to empower them through Special Olympics. So we are a statewide organization. We are across the state. We have 6 regions, and we have 35 employees, and always just trying to kind of expand our reach to if there's athletes or if there's people, youth and adults with intellectual disabilities, giving them the opportunities to participate in sports, to increase their self-confidence and their self-worth, and folks to volunteer. There's research that says if you volunteer, you live longer. There's just a lot of different parts to it, and I'm just really excited to be a part of it.
And something I didn't realize just reading up on Special Olympics before I was talking to you, the 27 counties for the North Missouri region, I see that covers over 1,000 athletes involved. And, I mean, that's just amazing to me that there's that many involved in. I read nationwide over 5 million athletes involved from over 170 countries. And I think I read it's the largest sports organization in the world.
It is the largest sports organization. And I've not been, as far as that familiar here. I know I've participated or volunteered here in the area of Jefferson City. But there in northern Missouri, I know there's a lot of athletes or those with intellectual disabilities that have not participated. They've not been exposed to it. So at the end of the day, we do have 6 regions. The region of the North region is a large geographical area. It is based out of St. Joe. Therefore, they're in the great Northwest that I talk about. And I get snickers here in central Missouri because I do talk about that. But it is worldwide. And it is the largest sports organization in the world. So there's a lot of resources that accompany that. But at the end of the day, how are we serving there in Northwest Missouri, Northern Missouri, and across the state just for those with intellectual disabilities and giving them opportunities to participate and for folks to volunteer? We're looking for coaches, financial partners. I mean, there's just a lot of different elements of it. But it is a very organization that's very inspiring to me. And really looking forward to the future.
And for those that didn't realize that it's, it actually operates on a local level as well as state, national, and worldwide. For those local individuals that want to get involved, and I know I've seen on the calendar things going on in Chillicothe and Maryville and St. Joe and Savannah, how does somebody get involved with that aspect here locally?
Yeah, that's a great question. They can go to the easy not the easy, but going to our Special Olympics website, it's just SOMO.org. So that's www.SOMO for Special Olympics, www.SOMO.org, and that stands for Special Olympics Missouri org. Or they can call our direct number here in Jefferson City, where our headquarters is, at 573-635-1660. And they can look for opportunities if they're willing, again, to get involved. And that is through coaching, through volunteering, through financial partnerships, or just a lot of different areas. Or if they're just interested, or if they have a loved one or family member that they think might be interested in participating, we encourage them to do the same thing, to just give us a call or go to our website, and we can get the information to them.
And I know, just like in every organization, there's different levels and different participation. And I know some people put a lot of effort into that. Like we've had stories on Charlie Phillips lately. I think he's from the Savannah area that is actually going to, I believe it's Nationals. So for people that put in training like that, what does it look like? What does the training look like for Special Olympics? Is it any different than what we'd normally think of as sports training?
You know, that's a great question, Rick. And Charlie's actually qualified for the World Games, that he'll be overseas. So we're looking forward to that here next month for him. But it's basically the same that you and I and any other activity that you might get involved with. Here we're coming into the November of the month. Today's Halloween. And so today my two kids that are in high school, they're starting out basketball practice. So, you know, they'll have practice each day. If you're involved with Special Olympics as an athlete, they probably won't practice every day. It will just vary based upon need, desire, facilities, et cetera, and it's their willingness of how much they want to get involved. So, you know, we look for coaches, those that volunteer to work with our athletes, and we're just really excited. But it truly is, it varies of all levels. And basically, if you can imagine it, that's basically what it is, just from as little amount of getting involved to being on a regular basis, their training, whether it's weightlifting, whether it's bowling, whether it's bocce ball, whether it's something that's very very high that we have flag football, here in the seasons of volleyball, and then we make accommodations based on their needs. So if they're intellectually disabled, and the accommodations that we're able to make just to work with them, that they're not going to be, you know, because of their disability, that they're not going to be discriminated against, or just that disability would keep them from participating is an important part.
And I didn't realize Charlie had went that far to the worldwide level. What qualification process did he have to go through to get that far?
Yeah, he qualified at the local level, and then our state games, and then we went to national. The USA Games were in Orlando this summer. That was just a great experience for many athletes. I did not join them, as I had not started until the end of July is when I started working here. And then through that, he qualified for the World Games. So he's super excited about it, and we're just really excited for him to represent Missouri and for him to have that experience. It will be a lifetime experience for him.
And we're joined this morning by Larry Linthgen, the CEO of Special Olympics Missouri. It's really interesting to hear just how extensive Special Olympics Missouri is and the benefits it does provide for, you know, children and adults with intellectual disabilities. One more time, Larry, before we let you go, tell us one more time how to get a hold of Special Olympics Missouri and those resources, where we can find those.
Absolutely. You can go to our district, or that was back from my years in education. Our headquarters website at www.somo.org, or they can call our direct line at 573-635-1660. They can call that number. They can ask for me. I'll help them. We've got some great folks here to help them, and I can as well ask for Larry, and I'll get them in the, if I don't have the answer, I can get them headed in the right direction. And just appreciate anyone wanting to join with us to help those with intellectual disabilities and to help build their confidence. And we're just excited about it and appreciate the opportunity.
And once again, we're speaking with Larry Linthgen, the CEO of Special Olympics Missouri. Thanks for joining us this morning, Larry.
Rick, thank you, and you have a nice day.
You're listening to the Northwest Mo Info Show on Regional Radio. We'll take a break, and when we return, we'll be joined by Caroline Bailey with the Missouri Baptist Children's Home to learn more about adoption and foster care needs in the state of Missouri. Welcome back to the Northwest Mow Info Show. November is National Adoption Month. That's a time not only to recognize those families who have been blessed by adoption, but also to shed light on the need for foster and adoptive families to step forward and care for children who are in desperate need of a home and a loving family. Caroline Bailey is not only an adoption professional with the Missouri Baptist Children's Home, but she is also an adoptive parent. We're pleased to have Caroline Bailey with us this morning. Caroline is a Family Resource Development Supervisor with Missouri Baptist Children's Home. She joins us this morning to talk about adoption and foster care as November is National Adoption Month. So, Caroline, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Many families have been, touched in some way by adoption, and I know while you do work in the field, you've also had the pleasure of adopting the child, so you have that personal aspect to share as well. If you could, give us a little background on why you decided to adopt.
Sure. So, well, my adoption story is kind of lengthy, so I'll try to keep it pretty short. But whenever my husband and I got married, we knew that the only way that we could have a family was through adoption. And so between knowing that in advance, of course, and working in the field of foster care, I knew there was a great need for families who could step up and foster and then potentially go on to adopt, if that were to become the goal. And so it just felt like a natural thing for us to do. And that led us to the point we became foster parents. And when our children's cases goals changed to adoption, we went on to adopt our kids.
And we talked earlier about, you mentioned, you do work for Missouri Baptist Children's Home, which provides foster and adoptive care as well as other services for family and children throughout Missouri. But even with that professional knowledge and working in that field, did your expectations for becoming a foster and adoptive parent meet your experiences, when you actually did that?
Oh, goodness. I would say probably yes and no. Yes, in the sense that having former case management experience, I understood the policies and processes that were in place, the laws that impact foster care, as well as how quickly or slowly the courts can move the roles of the various players on the team, reunification, of course, being the number one goal when a kid comes into care. So I understood all of that. I think what it did not prepare me for was just how emotionally draining and how much of a roller coaster it can be to foster. When you are loving on and caring for a child every day in your home, and, there's always in the back of your mind is this child maybe going to be leaving this week? Is it going to be a call today? And this child may be leaving today. But I know that from my experience as a case manager, I was able to pull from that because I knew it was super important for my husband and I both to be involved in all of the meetings so that any decision that was made would not be a surprise. So again, I think yes and no, it definitely prepared me for kind of the process of it. It did not prepare me fully for the just the ups and downs and just kind of the heartbreaking moments and also the moments of joy that we experienced when we were fostering.
And I know just like everything, you do have those highs and those lows. And how do you cope with that knowing that, this child that you've grown close to as a foster parent may be leaving at some point if they do reunify with the parent?
Yeah, so what we did and what I often encourage other families to do is that just make sure you are open in communication, ask questions, and be an active member of the team. If there's a court hearing or meetings, make sure that you're present, even if it's only by phone, so that, again, the decisions that are being made, the things that are being discussed, won't come as a surprise for you. Another thing, too, is that the truth is that these children that are in care belong to other people. They are other people's children. And the number one goal is reunification. That is a federal law. And so going into that, understanding that, acknowledging it, and embracing it is really important. I think for myself, probably about 3 months into our oldest child's case, I just had this moment, and I personally believe that God spoke to me in that moment and said, "This is not about you." And I think that's what really kind of carried my husband and I through it, was just recognizing that our experience, our fostering of our kids, really was not about us. It was about this child. It was about this child's biological family. So I think just taking a step back and having that perspective is key to being successful.
And talking about, you know, this being about the child, that's a good lead into, you know, a lot of people hear adoption and they think, you know, it's a happy moment, which it is. You know, it brings another child into the family, but it necessarily wasn't happy or hasn't been happy the entire time because something happened to that child to cause, you know, him or her to end up at care. So, you know, a lot of children, you know, they're going to deal with that, you know, for their life, depending on how old they were when they went to care, obviously. But as a parent and a professional both, what are some things you see children go through as they come into care, they're placed with a foster family who they most likely don't know? And as they go through that process, how do they cope with that? And what have you seen?
Yeah, so I have really yet to see any child, whether that's a small child or even an older youth, say, thank you so much for rescuing me. I think sometimes the word rescue gets thrown around in the system. I have yet to see that. Most of the time, the kids are scared, confused, possibly in denial, and most likely almost always want to go back home. Because from our perspective as adults, we're like, okay, well, you're being removed from this unsafe situation. But for the child, it's their family. It's their home. It's their pets, their friends, their neighborhood. Basically, they've lost everything in the blink of an eye. And so for us, what I've seen is, you know, I have seen toddlers walking around the office crying for mommy, which is heartbreaking. I have overheard older youth who have come into care talking about, well, you know, I think mom and dad really messed up this time. So the kids are very much aware that they have been removed from their family of origin. Even with newborns who are removed and placed immediately in the hospital, you know, I feel comfortable to tell you that all three of my children were placed as newborns, and they all perceive adoption differently. You know, two of them don't really ask a lot of questions. They've known from the very beginning. We've been very open about adoption in our family. It's a word that we don't shy away from. But I have one child who has questioned everything from the beginning and has really grieved not having that connection with the biological family. So, again, from our perspective, it's like, okay, well, they're being placed in a better situation, but every situation that involves adoption starts with a loss. And that loss, I believe, it evolves as a child gets older and starts to understand really what all that he or she has lost.
Right, and my story is a little different because I adopted a teen who was in his mid-teens by that point when the adoption went through, and I understand, you know, even today, that's been several years, but even today, seeing, you know, that loss that he still feels, and I know I couldn't have done it, he couldn't have done it without the resources that the team brought into, you know, both for me and to him to help him. So for those people out there that, you know, might be questioning, you know, could I really do that? Can I step in and help a child? You know, what resources are available to those families and to the children?
Sure. There are a lot of resources available, but I will tell you one of the most valuable resources that I've personally found is connecting with other foster adoptive parents. I kind of joke about I have sort of two sets of friends. I have a set of friends who have never fostered and never adopted, and I have a set of friends who have only fostered and only adopted. And it's the things, the experiences you can share, the support, the communication, the feeling of I totally understand what you're going through, that is invaluable as a resource of support for you. So beyond just that personal connection, a lot of area churches around the state often really do want to help out kids in the system and families that work with them. So anywhere from Christmas wish lists being filled to clothing closets, some churches have offered respite where, you know, kind of like a parent night out situation. There's lots of community support in that respect. And then also for each child, of course, every child's needs are different. So I often encourage people to go to the caseworker that is involved and say, hey, you know, my child is struggling with this right now. Are there resources for it? Caseworkers are connected to a lot of resources. There's also I know in Southwest Missouri we have foster.connect, and I believe it's actually all over the state. They are an organization that provides anything from training to diapers to, beds, clothing, food, nutrition services for anyone that's been impacted by the foster adoption community, including biological parents, relatives, foster parents, adoptees. And then, of course, there's always your local mental health services, therapy services, and education services that are available for kids.
And I know those resources are out there, and a lot of those, you know, are readily available. People might not realize how much help there really is available, even, you know, we're in the northwestern part of the state, a more rural part, and it's even available here, Foster Adopt Connect, you know, both in Maryville and Cameron in our area of the state, or Chillicothe in our area of the state. And, you know, just with my history, I was a trustee for Missouri Baptist Children's Home, and I talked to several people about, you know, the need for foster families, the need for adoptive families, and most people I talked to had never even considered it. And the reason I got involved as the foster and adoptive parent is I was telling people what, you know, we were looking for in parents, and somebody turned around to me and said, "You just described yourself." So tell us, as a professional field, what are you looking for families? We always hear these advertisements that, you know, you don't have to be perfect.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, it is true. You don't have to be perfect. I haven't met a perfect person yet, actually. What I find valuable in anyone who wants to become a foster adoptive parent is a willingness to learn. You don't have to be an empty nester. You can have kids already in your home right now. You can be single or married. I mean, there's all those checks that we can mark on a person to make them available for foster care. But bottom line is you have to be willing to learn. Also, just having a sense of humor, that will go a long way, because you may face some situations that you never thought you'd be involved in. You'll learn things you kind of sometimes wish you didn't want to learn. So a sense of humor really does help to promote success in fostering. Also, people that are stable. I know that sounds silly, but people who have a stable marriage. Fostering and adoption can impact marriages. And so make sure that both spouses are on board with wanting to foster and adopt. We also look for families who have flexible expectations, because the truth is, you know, there are some kids who do better with males and some kids who do better with females. And so sometimes what that looks like in a household is sort of flipping those traditional roles that you may already have in your home and being open to that. So flexible expectations. Just a genuine love for children and families is key, of course. I want people to understand that, you know, for many of the families, the biological parents who we come in contact with through the fostering system, you know, for families who are Christians and are foster parents, they may be the only, avenue to Christ that some of these families have. And so I've often told families, you know, you cannot be responsible for what other people say or how they act, but you can be responsible for how you act and what you say. So make sure that you are representing Christ in your interactions with the people. So that's kind of what we look for and what I look for in a foster family. I know there's a lot more characteristics there too. So,
right, and I can attest, you know, what you say about having to have that open mind and just the sense of humor, because I've heard a lot of things and know a lot of things now that probably didn't want to know, you know, just from going that experience. And I'm going to give you a chance, because Missouri Baptist Children's Home is near and dear to my heart, and I want you to tell us a little bit about the Children's Home and, you know, the history and what services it provides now.
Sure. So Missouri Baptist Children's Home has been around for a long time, and, you know, we originally were at an orphanage, and through the years, as the needs of the community have changed, so have our services. And so most of our services are now out in the community, what we call community-based services. We still do have some campuses in Mount Vernon and Kansas City area, St. Louis area, where kids actually will live on campus for a varying type of services. But again, the majority of work we do is actually out in your local community. One of our programs that we do is licensing. So we do this statewide, where we will train and write the home studies on families who are interested in becoming foster parents. And, of course, that also can include going on to adopt. We also do a lot of contract work with Children's Division. Our agency works very closely with the state of Missouri where, you know, we may train families for them. We might write some home cities for them, but ultimately those families would be managed by Children's Division. So we do that. We also have a treatment foster care program. This is really one of our specialized programs, and I just want to say that we have a huge need for families to do treatment foster care. The kids that are referred to this program are ones that, for whatever reason, a variety of reasons, have not been able to make it in a traditional foster family setting. And so they just need a lot of extra support and patience and a willingness to help them be successful. Those families undergo the same training as what we call traditional foster parents, and then there's some additional training on top of that. This program allows for one parent to be able to stay home, to really love on and parent a child who is definitely in need of stability. I personally have seen kids that have come into our treatment foster care program and gone on to be adopted or gone on to be reunified, and maybe like 6 months prior to that, they were sitting in a residential facility somewhere. So that program is very successful. We also do family foster care case management, and we do that in different parts of the state where we have staff who are case managers who work closely with biological parents, foster families, and children, and they work on the goals set forth by the court. So we have had a lot of success with reunifying with biological parents. We've also had adoptions that have occurred, and then we also work closely with relative families who have taken in a relative to foster. We also do transitional living, and that's for older youth that are in the system that, you know, they're not going to be reunified and they're not going to be adopted, but we need to help them get to adulthood. And so we have apartments that are set up and case manager that's assigned to them, and they go visit them, and it really just helps those kids get, like, build some independent living skills, but also while they're being supervised for their safety. And then, of course, one of our newer programs is we have a human trafficking rescue program on one of our campuses, and we work closely with women and teenagers who have fled the human trafficking industry or have been rescued off the human trafficking industry, and just really minister and mentor them to bring them to a place of healing. We also do some maternity services through the Lighthouse program out of Kansas City, where we work with biological parents who have come to us and find themselves in what they would consider a crisis pregnancy, and we provide counseling services. You know, some of those moms have gone on to make adoption plans. A lot of them have chose to parent. I think once they get past that point of a crisis, they recognize that there is support out there for them, and so they have gone on to parent their child. That's a very brief description of what we do.
Yeah, and that's a lot of things going on with the children's home. It's a lot more than just the original orphanages that, you know, started there in St. Louis. And up in our area, Foster Adopt Connect and Cornerstones of Care provide the services for, I think, all of our listening area. So if somebody's interested, should they just get a hold of a Children's Division, or how do they do that?
Yeah, I think whatever county that you're residing in, contact your local Children's Division. And ask them, just let them know that you'd like to sign up to be a foster parent. If there are, Foster Adopt Connect could also connect you with maybe different agencies that might do the same type of work. I do know that a lot of rural areas usually only have Children's Division to go through, but you might want to explore to see if there are private agencies that provide that service as well. So I always tell people the first step is to make the call and ask questions.
And November is National Adoption Month. We've been speaking with Caroline Bailey from the Missouri Baptist Children's Home. Once again, thank you, Caroline, for everything you do for the Children's Home and for your own children there that you brought in for adoption. And thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you for joining us this morning. If you would like to learn more about Special Olympics Missouri or the Missouri Baptist Children's Home or adoption in general, you can find links and resources under the Northwest Mo Info Show section of our website at northwestmoinfo.com. Tune in next Saturday. We'll be joined by Mark Hancock, the CEO of Trail Life USA. That's a rapidly growing Christian scouting alternative for boys. We'll also kick off the Christmas season with a visit to the Rubidoux Resident Theater production of The Trial of Ebenezer Scrooge. If you missed the show, want to share it with friends and family, or if you just want to hear it again, you can check out all of our shows in podcast form on northwestmoinfo.com. For the Northwest Mo Info Show, this is Rick Turner. Thanks for joining us today.